This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Jack Hahn, a winner of well over $100,000 in his FFPC career alone. In this episode, Hahn tells us why he's been so successful in live auctions, whether stacking pass catchers on the same team can be good for season-long leagues as well, and some advice for people jumping into the FFPC for the first time in 2017. You can follow Hahn on Twitter at JackHahnLaw. Also, to kick things off on this podcast, we'll hear from 2016 FFPC main event co-champion Nelson Sousa, the winner of the $250,000 grand prize in the contest, along with his co-manager David Hubbard. Sousa tells us what Patriots running back he's taking a chance on, if he's buying into the Devontae Parker hype, and more. You can follow Sousa on Twitter at the_franchise12. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it helps support the podcast channel. Now, without further ado, let's check in with the champ, Nelson Sousa. Nelson, we are now past the NFL draft. We are entering fantasy draft season. The Football Guys Players Championship kicks off on Sunday. I know you've had a lot of success in that competition as well. What are you doing to prepare for draft season, the thick of draft season? We know the NFL schedule. We know what the teams did in the draft. We largely know what everybody did in free agency as far as the NFL teams go. So what are you doing now that you these pieces have all been set up?
Right now it's just listening and watching news coming out of OTAs, getting familiar with all the depth charts in the NFL and what each position that each team has, and then figuring out what players, situations I like and dislike, so I can start mapping out, what the draft looks like.
You recently did do a 20-round classic with the Fantasy Football Players Championship. Of course, the Genesis and Revelations drafts happen every single year. The first real classics of the season that take place. I don't want to get into the whole strategy of what you did for the whole draft there, but specifically a pick I wanted to talk about, what you did in the ninth round in that league. What was with Mike Gillisley in the ninth round? I mean, this is the first time in a long time, maybe ever, that he has been picked in a single digit round, this early in the season. What kind of numbers do you think he puts up for New England this year?
I mean, maybe that was that's going to be a bad pick. I don't know, but I didn't think that was a bad spot to take a chance on a guy like that. Even though New England's got a lot of backs there, what I'm trying to decipher is what Belichick's going to do this season, and it's curious because he's acquiring a lot of skill position players. And LeGarrette Blount's gone, and Gillisley basically is the big back there besides Burkhead. I don't know. I my feeling is that he's got potential to put up 1,000 yards, double digit touchdowns. I think he's a talented player, so I think he could fill in that role. Ninth round pick. Not the end of the world. So that's kind of what I was projecting with that pick. But, it could also turn out to be a pick that's just a headache all season long.
Philosophically, when it comes down to these 20-round classics, at what round do you normally start, taking shots on players like Gillisley, players that, might have a very high ceiling but that also come with a low floor? Is it the ninth round? Is that sort of, once you have your core built, is that what you're still, starting to look at flyers at that point?
I would say probably right after the eighth round. is where I start looking at guys and not worry too much about their floor and just looking at their ceiling. You know, my style has always been go big or go home. So I'll whiff on some players, you know, because they don't tend to work out, rather than taking the safer player with a higher floor. I'm always, you know, swinging for the fences, looking for those high upside guys. If an injury, you know, comes about, which, you know, there's some, you know, luck that plays a role into that. But if, you know, some type of injury or whatever comes about, I look at it as more of, okay, talent when added to opportunity is going to equal this. So that's what I focus on, is more on the talent.
In that same FFPC Genesis League, you were actually the second to last team to select a tight end. You get Julius Thomas one round after the Gillislee pick. You get JT in the 10th. Do you plan on waiting on tight end like that in these tight end premium leagues, the 1.5 point per catch leagues for tight ends, like the FFPC, like the Football Guys Players Championship? Is that sort of your plan this season? And what did you like about Julius Thomas in the 10th?
Yeah, when I've looked at the position at tight end, there's really not many tight ends that I like, and based on where they're going, I really don't like them. So this year for me, it's kind of, you know, Gronkowski or punt back is pretty much my thinking right now. I really don't like any of those middle guys and where they're going. And then the reason why I took Julius was I've always liked the talent. He's, you know, I'm playing the narrative. You know, he's back with his old coach from Denver when he had, you know, that breakout year. And I think Miami needs another, you know, dynamic offensive player, especially like in the red zone. You know, Parker could eventually, you know, become that guy, but, you know, Landry and Stills are really, that's not their skill set. So I think Julius is that kind of guy that, you know, maybe catches, you know, 50, 60 balls, but, you know, double digit touchdowns. So the potential's there for that.
Julius Thomas moves to Miami this year in the NFL, and now he has a new teammate that is getting a lot of pre-draft hype in the, you know, the Twitterverse and in a lot of the advice sites out there. Devontae Parker, he is going right at the end of the 9th round of FFPC drafts. The 9-11 is his current ADP. So a breakout for him at that point in the draft would obviously be very impactful for anybody who drafts him there. Are you going to be buying into the hype? Are you going to be selecting Devontae Parker in the 9th round this year?
I think that's going to be short-lived, actually. You know, Football Guys drafts are going to start next week. I think you're going to see that maybe for the first couple of weeks, but I think as the summer rolls along, you're going to see Parker move up rather quickly. And that buying opportunity where he's a value in the 9th round is going to go away. You know, I would probably, if I had to guess, I think he's going to end up being like a 5th or 6th round pick. I think the hype's going to, you know, get out of control for him. I think he's a talented player. But I also think at that point, there's no value there to be had on Parker in that kind of round. So, yeah, I mean, if he stays there for a little bit, you know, here in the beginning, I'll probably own him on a couple of teams, but I don't expect to chase him up the board too much.
Well, I do expect a lot of teams to be chasing your squads up the board this year in the Football Guys Players Championship and in the FFPC as well, Nelson. Thank you so much for joining us once again on the High Stakes Lowdown. This was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. Hopefully the listeners did too. And we'll do this again soon, man.
All right. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks to Nelson Sousa for his input this week. Now here's Jack Hahn, a man who's won more than $100,000 in the FFPC, giving us the High Stakes Lowdown.
Jack Hahn when you are not playing high stakes fantasy football. Tell the listeners what you are doing for a living.
Well, Eric, I'm a business attorney. I started my own law firm near my home in Palos Heights, Illinois, almost 5 years ago now. So I've had my own firm that whole time and been growing it. So I represent businesses and business owners primarily in litigation and in court cases, but also in corporate transactions.
See, to me, that's pretty, I mean, that's an intensive job that takes up a lot of time. How do you find the time to compete in all, you know, dynasty and high stakes? How do you find the time to still not only compete, but be successful in high stakes fantasy football?
Well, it's easier now that I have my own law firm. Because I get to decide when I work and when I want to do football. You know, it's tough. I have to juggle many things here at work and then also at home. So I just find what free time I have, usually at night, you know, try to read some things here and there during the day, but it's tough. It's tough.
Before, let's get into the fantasy football talk portion of the interview, but before we actually get into redraft, because that'll be a pretty important part of what we want to talk to you about today, tell us a little bit, because you play so many dynasty leagues, tell us a little bit about how your rookie drafts ended up this year. I'm assuming the majority of them are either complete or near completion. And then did you end up actually getting a lot of the same rookies in many of your dynasty leagues?
Well, it was busy this year for me with Dynasty. I'm in five FFPC dynasties, and I had 13 first-round picks among those five. And one of them, I was completely rebuilding one of the 2,500 league teams, so that took a lot of work over the last few months. But you know, trying to juggle all of that, it's so much fun, but that takes time, just like we were talking about. I took a look back at my drafts, and there were several guys I saw that I took three times, four guys that I took three times: O.J. Howard, Kareem Hunt, Cooper Kupp, and Elijah Hood. So, I mean, I can tell you a little bit what my thought process was if you come to.
I'm curious that Elijah Hood to me is interesting because, you know, we saw what Oakland did last year with getting Jalen Richard and Dwayne Washington, and now they go out and get Marshawn Lynch. And Hood was not like a pedigree day one, day two pick. What did you see in Hood that gave you the inclination to want to acquire him in more than one league?
Well, he was pedigreed coming out of high school. He was a four-star recruit, so he was pretty highly regarded. But he had one really productive year at North Carolina and was then hurt last year somewhat, so he split some time. So he has been productive in the past. Now, I looked at that situation in Oakland, and, you know, we have no idea whether Marshawn Lynch is going to be productive, whether he's going to be healthy. The last year that he played, he wasn't very healthy. So Hood is a big back, could easily move into that role in a year. And he was really cheap. You know, he was going late in these dynasty drafts. I don't put a lot of stock into Washington and Jalen Richard because they're smaller pass catching kind of guys. So I thought for his price, Hood was a good guy to focus on as one of the guys you stash on your roster.
And to me, I mean, especially when you're playing in the FFPC for dynasty leagues, to me, it almost seems like with some of these running backs, you need to stash them sometimes a year in advance, because the payoff that what we could be seeing with Elijah Hood next year, or maybe even as soon as, you know, the second half of this year, if the wheels fall off with Lynch, I mean, maybe Hood all of a sudden steps into the opportunity of running behind one of the best offensive lines in football, and he ends up, you know, having like a Jordan Howard like finish to the 2017 season, and everybody's saying like, oh man, why did we not see this Hood thing coming? Well, you know, the pieces were out there. I mean, the information that we had was out there, and Hood could just be a guy that turns it on, you know, as soon as the end of this year, but maybe next year he's the man.
He could be, and you know, with the short rosters in FFPC, you have to see something really to keep a guy like that if you have a handful of guys that you're sitting on. And there's only so many guys you can keep, so it makes it tough. So you have to hopefully see something out of him to see whether he's worth stashing. But as a pick right now, I thought it was worth it.
You've already been drafting for redraft leagues with the FFPC this year, some of the satellite leagues that are offered there. Has anything, as you have moved throughout, the early, middle, and later parts of these drafts, has anything stood out to you that's maybe a little bit different this year as far as trends or themes that you're seeing that you maybe necessarily didn't see at all last year, maybe as strong last year? What is standing out to you, Jack, about 2017 redrafts?
Well, one's fairly obvious with these running backs. Recency bias is in full effect because now you see these running backs going high in drafts again, when for several years that was the trend was away. And I knew this was coming someday. I knew there was going to be back more the way it used to be in the quote unquote old days, right? Where running backs were drafted much higher and more frequently in the first round. And so, which is a good development in my mind because we need to have a little diversity in these drafts and ways to do team construction. So I just see drafters are so reactionary to the prior year with this recency bias. It happens every single year to me. And I could see it coming already last year. So that's exactly the way some of these early redrafts are playing out.
For anyone that is seeing the same thing as you continually in satellite drafts with the running backs, is there a way that high stakes players can capitalize on that, capitalize that the recency bias of what we saw last year and how it's being translated into how drafts are playing out this year? Is there a way to capitalize on that to really maximize dominance or maximize your the best possible outcome for teams that you're drafting?
I always look for that, but it's so early in the year. I haven't seen trends where I see enough guys that have fallen yet. I need to go through a few more drafts to see what kind of value there's falling through rounds like 5 through 10 with some of those guys. But definitely yes, because if there are more running backs that are going to be going early, there are going to be different ways to do team construction as we go along in those mid rounds. So just haven't seen yet how I'm going to do it this year.
Over the last few years in the FFPC live events out in Las Vegas, Jack, you've had a lot of success, and not just with the FFPC, but you had just a lot of success with live auctions in general against such tough competition among these high stakes players. How have you been so successful in cashing in so many leagues and winning leagues over the last few years? And conversely, are there any mistakes that you see these players, making time and time again or making year after year that's really hamstringing their auction performances?
Well, let me start with what I think has been successful for me. There's a couple things. One of them, I've had a really good draft plan the last 2 years. That's worked out in the way I've carried out my auctions and just executed them. It's basically getting two or three stud players, but one of them was always a tight end, and usually it was Gronk. Now, the last 2 years I've done that in the 2500 auction. I thought the tight ends were underpriced, and was grabbing. I made sure I'd grab one of the top tight ends, and then usually I was trying to get a really good running back too. Now that had been different from the wide emphasis on wide receivers. But the way prices were playing out, it really worked out well for me. The other thing is that I found has been incredibly effective for me for all the years I've been doing these auctions is I have pricing for FFPC auctions down cold by the time I walk into those auctions in Vegas. I have completed auctions that use FFPC rules and scoring, and those prices are dead on. And I compile those through the summer as I complete these and I have access to some of these. And by the time I get to Vegas, I see where the values lie in the pricing for players because I've seen now through many years that I've been doing this, those prices are going to match what I've come in with. Now, you get a rogue price out there once in a while on a player, but it's amazing. So how close it is. So when it comes to my looking at this ahead of time, I can see what I think are going to be areas I can hit, what studs might be a little bit less than you'd expect, and especially what positions. And in the last couple of years, frankly, the tight end position has been undervalued dramatically in these auctions in Vegas.
You know, what strikes me, you know, in hearing you talk about this and knowing that this structure, this pricing structure that you have down right now has been, you know, so dead on for you. I always think about people who talk about, you know, preparing for fantasy auctions and at least one, you know, anytime you have a conversation about it, at least once in the conversation, somebody says, well, every auction's different. I mean, every auction's a different animal. But for you, maybe that's not necessarily the case. I mean, obviously, you know, you said that there always could be the outlier bid or whatever. But by and large, when you do these auctions with the FFPC, you know, scoring and lineup and everything like that, when you do a bunch of them, you can kind of know how things are going to be going in when you show up to the live auction in Vegas based on your experience.
That's absolutely correct. Every auction is different, but the numbers are the same because there's only so much money to go around. So if certain numbers are higher, I know that some of these other guys are going to be lower. But it's not dramatically different every time. It's amazing, and every time I walk out of one of those, my numbers are there. In terms of them being accurate assessments of how these prices are going to go. So yes, they all start differently. There's different price enforcing. You know, there's all kinds of different nuances. But when it comes to the numbers, I walk in there very confident, knowing how the numbers are going to go.
When you when you're sitting in on these auctions, is there anything that you see different competitors at the table do that just, you know, has you shaking your head, or you look at the board afterwards, or you're like, what was that guy thing? Is there anything that you see and people just maybe not necessarily learning from their mistakes, or that, you know, different people making the same mistakes in auctions every year?
Yeah, that's the other part of the question I didn't answer. Thanks for reminding me. I think players aren't nearly aggressive enough. Sometimes I see teams that sit back for a long time and don't specifically go get an anchor player or two for their team. And some people just love to get a lot of values at the end, but then I think they're average throughout their players. And yes, the strategy can work, but to me, it's an outlier strategy. I've watched the best auction players in Vegas. I know who they are, and I hate getting in leagues with them, but they do the same thing where they are aggressive, and most of them will go for stud players and then fill in. So it's just how many studs they want to get. So, you know, I'm gonna have my own strategy. I'm going to follow those who do well also and learn from them. But I constantly see these mistakes from people that think I'm going to have this nice team full of $15 to $20 players. I don't like that strategy. Plus, it just doesn't fit my personality as a litigation attorney. I'm aggressive. I want to go for it.
That's right. I love it. It's just, you know, one of those cases where, you know, your day-to-day life enhances your fantasy life for sure. So that's good advice too. I mean, just in general, being aggressive and even in drafts or anything like that, just acquiring elite talent, as many elite talent pieces as, you know, you can afford while still keeping your team, you know, you're not, killing it for the second half or the last two thirds of the auction. I think as many of those elite pieces you can buy and just hit on a couple of those quote unquote mid rounders and all of a sudden you're looking like one of the teams to beat.
Right, exactly.
Let's talk about this is something that's, I don't know if it's necessarily new for 2017, but I'm hearing more people talk about this. You know, people in the past have called it the hookup or, you know, something like that, but stacking is a term that's a lot of daily fantasy players are familiar with, but for season long, it's something that, I don't want to say it's all the rage, but it's definitely coming in vogue. It seems like when I'm watching these drafts this year, what's your opinion on loading up with, players at the same position on the same team, such as like Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb, or Jameson Crowder and Josh Doctson, or Gronk and Julian Edelman, you know, combos like that. What's your opinion on doing that, where you're not necessarily taking one of these guys like in the 12th, 13th round? You're investing two premium picks into two guys, you know, two pass catchers, we'll call them, on the same team. What's your opinion on that, Jack?
It's not a strategy I'm going to go out and specifically look to do in a draft. Unless there's, you know, a combination of players were to fall to me in a draft, just by the natural flow and evolution of the draft, would I do it? And it just, to me, it comes down to where the value of those two guys lie in the draft. And I'm not going to pass up a guy just because it would stack, because if he's the best player on the board, I'll put him on the team with another player. I'm not against it. To me, it's all about points. I'm going to take the best player that I think is going to score the most amount of points for me. That's an interesting question, because literally the first guy I remember doing that in Vegas was Alex Kaganovsky. FFPC years ago in the WCOFF, and I didn't even know him that well, but I knew him and I went up to him, and I remember I said something really kind of off the wall aggressive to him. I'm like, just about how great I loved his strategy, and just kind of looked at me. We didn't know each other well enough back then. But I remember him taking Harrison and Wayne when they were the two guys in rounds 2 and 3, when they were the men on the Colts. So it's just an interesting correlation there with FFPC. But anyway, you know, it's not one of those things I'm going to purposely set out to do.
And I mean, it's not something you're targeting, but it's not something like if you end up at the end of the draft, you're like, oh, I got both these guys. Well, that'll be interesting. It's not something you would avoid.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's an interesting correlation to that draft strategy, though. And one thing I really do love to do is look for two players on one team to find a stud for myself. I've been doing this for years. And the first time I remember where it really paid off and I learned from it was when Roddy White broke out for the Falcons, because like all three of the receivers were going in the 10th round or later. And so I took all three, cause I thought one would break out, but I didn't know which, and it was Roddy White. And that led me to winning a league title, cause I had a guy that was fantastic. So I look for that every single year, of two guys to stack them, because I'm not sure which one it's going to be. And yeah, I think you gave an example. Crowder and Doctson could be one this year on a good offense, good passing offense. Who's the person that's going to assume number one there? So, you know, and where they're getting drafted. See, that's a place for me where stacking works as a draft strategy. I think one of the really, really cheap ones this year where it could work out is as Frank Gore and Marlon Mack, running back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Gore's going in like 8th round or so now, and Mack's going to be a late pick. You know, unless something funny happens in preseason with those guys, that's a super cheap pairing to get the running back. You would think you'd get the number one running back on a really good offense.
Hey, Jack, as long as we're on the subject of it, I'm just curious, because you know, Twitter was all abuzz last week about how Mike Wallace, a lot of people think Mike Wallace is being undervalued in drafts. And then, you know, the Breshad Perriman supporters came out en masse to defend how Perriman's going to break out this year. That is a team that does not have a ton of playmakers on their offense. And Wallace, you know, you can get in like, you know, the 10th, 11th, Breshad Perriman, 11th, 12th, somewhere around there. What about those two guys as far as stacking? Because it seems like, I mean, Mike Wallace has already broken out, but he could still provide a pretty good value there if he has a big year.
It's a perfect example. We don't know which one would assume the number one. You know, you think Wallace would, since he's the vet, but you're hearing good reports about Perriman already in these OTAs, and he could easily ascend to number one if he starts making big plays and they start focusing on him. So rather than take a shot with one, it's cheap draft capital to draft both of them. If, you know, and as your team construction's going on and you need a third wideout, take both. And, you know, I would assume one of them's going to probably break out.
Let's. I want to. Great stuff there about the receivers, but I want to shift focus back to the running backs here. And you kind of touched on this earlier when you talked about recency bias being in full effect. But I want to kind of pivot from that discussion to the specifically the rookie running backs. Ezekiel Elliott was you know taken at the fourth overall pick in the NFL draft last year, taken very very early in fantasy drafts, and really performed excellently. You couldn't have expected much better than what Elliott did his rookie year. So how does that affect Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Joe Mixon, specifically those four this year in redraft leagues? When should they be coming off the board? When do they become a value in 2017?
That's going to be the question of the summer, I think, as we look at it, especially a couple of these guys in training camp. Right now, if I had to peg them, I think Fournette's going to be a stud. But to me, he's a second-round pick. He's got the opportunity, the draft capital with the fourth pick. He's got a coach that wants to run, or at least a GM with Tom Cotton,
right?
He faced so many eight-man fronts in college during his last year when he was hurt, and he was still performing. To me, you have to look back at his sophomore year, absolute beast, right, when he was healthy. And he's not going to have nearly as many eight-man fronts in the NFL if Blake Bortles can be, you know, reasonably competent, which I suppose we're not going to know for a little while. But
right.
And we don't know his hands. I frankly think he's going to be a better pass catcher than we expect. So to me, the aggressive play, taking him in the second round, and frankly, if he starts showing anything in the preseason, we've seen this in the past, a guy like that could easily, you know, move his way up to the end of the first round. Other guys, McCaffrey is a little bit of an enigma to me. First of all, I love him as a player. When I watched him in the Rose Bowl against Iowa, my eyes bugged out of my head. That guy has such amazing vision and pass-catching skills. I think he's going to be a great running back. But when we're talking redraft this year, I have some concerns. Cause, you know, with Cam's shoulder being hurt, we just don't know if he's going to be able to lead that offense very well at the beginning of the year. And, McCaffrey's still going to have some time to adjust. So he's a tough one for me to get a grip on right now of how to analyze him. So, you know, maybe third or fourth round. I know guys have been aggressive drafting him in the third round pretty much now. But that one I got to watch a little bit yet. I'm not sure if we redraft. Now, the other two guys got coaches that like to play their vets, you know, with Dalvin Cook and Joe Mixon. You know, look like really highly talented guys, but they got coaches, especially – the guy in Minnesota, the coach, who loves to play his vets. So I'm not sure about them. You know, I'm thinking maybe sixth round for those guys, which is from a lot of guys, he's probably going to go, that those guys are going to go for the fifth round or so. So I probably wouldn't be getting them at where I'm viewing them right now.
When you talk about guys that really came on last season, Tyreek Hill is definitely in that conversation. He started off slow as a rookie, but you know, as my HSFFOR co-host Dave Gerzak and your friend likes to say, that you know, Hill just absolutely crushed it. Was one of the best receivers in the league the last 8 weeks of the season, and he's not getting a ton of draft buzz in redraft right now. He's going at the 602. In the FFPC, in satellites right now. Why do you think that a guy who just had a flat out crushing it of the last 2 months of the season last year is not getting the hype that we normally, the draft hype that we normally associate with a player, you know, of that ilk, you know, commanding the following year? And do you see him moving up draft boards throughout this summer?
I actually don't see him moving up. I think there's enough factors of risk with him where he's not going to move up. First of all, he's so little. Okay, you know, if the guy was 6'4", if he had Mike Williams measurables, it'd be a completely different story. But a lot of guys see a small Tyreek Hill, very fast, obviously. But, you know, there's some drawbacks with his size and being on, for me, Andy Reid, you just never know with Andy Reid. Jeremy Macklin's coming back. You know, Jeremy Macklin was hurt, and he's not going away. He's going to take up targets for sure. And I think Kareem Hunt is going to assume a major role in that offense, definitely by the second half of the year. So, I frankly, Tyreek Hill had a lot of long plays, including a lot of long running plays, and those aren't something that you can really project. I just don't think that's going to happen again. So I can see why people love him because he's so fast and exciting and had a great second half. But to me, there's enough risk factors there where I have doubts about whether he can produce the same this year.
One of the things that a lot of people look at when they are drafting throughout the summer, Jack, is the strength of schedule. What types of defenses will these guys be playing against, not only throughout the season, but in the championship weeks, you know, the playoff weeks, weeks 14 to 16? What defenses are they going to be playing? Now, there's some people that would say that, you know, listen, it's so difficult to project who's going to be healthy, what defense is going to be good, and what defense is going to be struggling during the summer. I can't even look at it. Where do you fall in on that? Do you look at strength of schedule when you're drafting your teams?
I do look at it. I used to factor it more into my analysis, especially the playoff weeks, because I like to have those really good matchups for, especially for running backs. Those are usually easier to predict. But as I've gone through this enough years, I've realized there's so many variables that come into play that I almost spend too much time factoring in schedule for the payoff. It's too hard to predict by the end of the year. So I've kind of cut back on the strength of schedule analysis for how I'm going to draft. Now, if there's, I do know who have the strong and the weak schedules. If there's two players that are close to me and I'm not quite sure which one I'm going to take, I'll take the guy with the easier schedule. So yeah, I do factor it in somewhat, but not as much as some guys do. I still talk to friends who really, you know, they'll break down the schedule tremendously and look at the playoff weeks. But you just never know what's going to happen after the first 12 to 13 weeks of the season. Some defenses get much better, and you know, then your analysis, you know, goes to pot. Doesn't work anymore. So, yeah, just I take it into analysis just a little bit these days.
Jack, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this podcast with RotoViz, the listenership that they have with RotoViz Radio that have never played high stakes fantasy football before. They've, you know, just played in office leagues, basement leagues, and that was all of us at some point. I mean, that's where we all came from, and many players made the jump to high stakes. For someone who is thinking about making that jump in 2017 and you know, playing with the FFPC or what have you, what's the one piece of advice that you would be sure that they took with them to their draft prep, to their actual draft, to managing their team throughout the season? What's the one thing, the most important thing that they need to understand?
I tell them no fear. No fear about drafting the guys that you want to draft. And don't fear ADP. You know, some people get married to it. They might see a player that's dropping. Oh, gee, now I need to take Joe Mixon because he's dropped an extra round. You know, I wouldn't do it. Take the players that you want to take, that you focused on, that you've talked about. And, you know, you spend how many weeks putting a draft plan together, execute it, right? And so don't get pushed off by things that are developing during the draft. You know, do what you set out to execute when you get there.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, the preparation aspect of you know, knowing who you want, what your specific targeted players are in each round, I think that's crucially important. But you always have to plan for, you know, well, what if this happens? What if this happens? You have to execute your draft plan. But to a certain point, you have to have a certain degree of flexibility with that plan, right?
Yeah, definitely. Every redraft for Vegas that I do, I literally will chart out at least the first 10 rounds and the guys I'm really targeting, and who should go, the guy of the guys that I'm targeting, who should go what round. So I'll know ADP. If there's a guy I really want, I'll jump him around for sure to take him. That'll help you if there is somebody that's fallen and that you really like, but it kind of messes up your draft plan. You can still look down a round or two or three to see, well, who else am I going to be able to focus on that would, you know, fill that second running back spot? If I'm suddenly taking a fourth wide out here because I wasn't expecting someone there, who's going to fill that in of my target player? So, yeah, there's always a lot of planning going in like that. And you can modify it that way, and you should, just as long as you know what you're going to do the next couple of rounds.
Yeah, definitely be prepared. Know what you're doing if you are going to divert from that plan, or at least, you know, pivot from that plan at a certain portion of the draft. At least have another plan going forward. Jack, when you have been drafting these early season leagues in the FFPC, kind of have a sense of how things are going to go throughout the summer as we approach the main event drafts. Can you give us an idea of a player that you think is going to be selected within those first few rounds that is going to be a bust this year? And then a guy maybe that you're trying to get later on in drafts, a flyer, a sleeper that not a lot of people are picking up on that you've been able to grab or that you plan on grabbing later on in drafts this season?
Yeah, I can tell you one guy I'm just not taking unless he falls an extra round, and that's Devonta Freeman. I don't like the fact that Kyle Shanahan's leaving that offense. He's the guy who's made that offense go for the past 2 years. And with him leaving, I think that's going to adversely affect everyone on that team. And he has a highly talented backup in Tevin Coleman, who, by the way, went to high school right down the street from me.
Oh, nice.
Maybe I have just a natural inclination to Tevin Coleman. There's just too many factors for me with Devonta. He might also be distracted. I know he's got a contract situation coming up in a year. And then to me, there's too many factors for how highly he's getting drafted that I'm just not going to take that risk on him. On the other hand, you know, I'm a Chicago guy, and I didn't like the pick when they took Kevin White. I think I was with you at the time when they did. I didn't like it. I still don't like it. And so I think Cam Meredith could easily be the number one wideout on the Bears this year. Now, he's a really good athlete, even though his measurables were only so-so when he was drafted, but he produced when he had the chance last year. And Cam Meredith, to me, is a guy that I take a chance on in those later rounds that could easily ascend to the number one on a team that's going to be terrible, and they're going to have to throw the ball in the second half. So there's a guy I'll probably be taking frequently.
You know, it's funny as we, you know, we did the show this past Friday, the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour, and I said that exact same thing about Cameron Meredith. This is a guy that, you know, could catch 70, 75, maybe 80 passes this year, and he's going in the 10th round, like the mid-10th round of FFPC drafts. You can actually, to touch on what we were talking about earlier, conceivably, you know, again, this is ADP, so, and every draft is usually a little bit different, especially when we get into the double-digit rounds. But conceivably, right now, you could take Cam Meredith in the 10th, Mike Wallace in the 11th, and Brashad Perriman in the 12th, and you might get two breakouts out of those picks right there to have a crazy good wide receiver core, and then you add two of those guys or three of those guys later on, you could be really dominant there, and it wouldn't really cost you much. So I am definitely with you on Meredith. Kevin White, man, I don't know. I mean, I remember when we watched that draft, I remember that a lot of, because we were in Chicago, a lot of Bears fans went crazy. They loved the pick. And I remember you kind of just being very, you weren't like super anti, this is terrible, this is awful. But I just remember looking at you and you had this look on your face like, man, I don't know, but this doesn't feel right at all.
I knew the history of wide receivers from West Virginia. Okay.
Right.
And very, very infrequently is there one that's good. Okay, so, you know, some people loved how great Kevin White looked and how he ran and what an athlete. Well, yeah, okay. We'll see once. So, so far, that's what's happened. He just hasn't been on the field. By the way, I had no idea you talked about Cam Meredith on your show. Unfortunately, I missed your show last week, so that was complete coincidence, my friend.
Oh, listen, it's a hot one. We got into this massive Laquon Treadwell argument whether Dave actually was ever on him, and I said how, and not to ruin the whole thing, but I said, well, you know, you actually were on him. It was just, you know, the year before he came out, and then once you saw his combine numbers, you got off him. And then, well, Dave and Jilly agreed, like, yes, you're definitely right about that, because Dave didn't draft Treadwell in any dynasty leagues. And but man, the white hot venom that was spewing for the first 10 minutes of the show, go and download it. It's worth the price of admission.
Will do.
All right. Well, Jack, listen, thanks so much for joining the High Stakes Lowdown this week. This was quite a treat. Very informative, very entertaining stuff. Excellent. As always, I always enjoy picking your brain when it comes to high stakes fantasy football. I wish you nothing but the best of luck this season. I hope all your dynasties go good, your main events. And of course, I know that you will definitely be as prepared or even better prepared than anybody else at the auction table in Vegas in September. So thank you so much, man. And we'll talk to you again soon.
And I appreciate you having me on tonight, Eric.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.